And now,
the definition. Definition.
They had anointed you to be the next great queen of the Democratic Party establishment, and you threw that away.
Tulsi Gabbard, the Hawaii Democrat and DNC vice chair, disinvited from the Democratic debate.
Has been at odds with her boss, DNC chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz, for months over the Democratic presidential debate schedule.
You were also quoted as saying, when I signed up to be vice chair of the DNC, no one told me I would be relinquishing my freedom of speech.
I am resigning from the DNC.
Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard sent shockwaves through the political world yesterday when she stepped down as vice chair of the Democratic National Committee.
I am truly honored to nominate Bernie Sanders for president of the United States.
I'm challenging the establishment, challenging the status quo.
Today, I announce my candidacy for president of the United States of America.
You have faced some really harsh criticism from fellow Democrats.
This war with Iran would be far more devastating than anything that we ever saw in Iraq.
Why were you the lone voice out there going after the neocons?
She won a number of online polls. She became the top trending candidate on Google.
She has reached well over the 130,000 individual donor threshold.
She's been dismissed and otherized by a media that seems unable to grapple with a servicewoman who dares question the bipartisan war consensus.
Tulsi Gabbard, who has 23 polls above 2%, and the DNC looking at that list and saying, yeah, but only one of these qualifies.
There is nothing more powerful than when we, the people, rise up united by our love for this country and our love for each other to bring about the kind of change in leadership that we need to bring.
How's it going, everybody? This is International Master Daniel Wrench. This is Chess.com. And this is the Everything You Need to Know video series, here today with the second installment on the middle game stage, or how tactics and strategy come together in a chess game. Tactics and strategy define every specific move that is made within a chess game, with the term tactic being used to describe every capture or every threat of capture you can make in a chess game or your opponent can make, and strategy being the term that describes just about every other move, every long-term thought, every deep plan that you can develop. Every long-term weakness that you or your opponent have in your position is a strategical weakness or a positional weakness. And we're going to talk about how strategy and tactics come together and how they work together. And you better buckle up, because in the next 15 minutes, we're going to jam-pack so much information into this video. It's going to move fast. It's going to be a bumpy ride. But I'm going to guarantee you results that will change your chess life. Because chess is 90% tactics, it's going to make up for the majority of this video, and it's where we're going to start. We use that term to describe chess as it being 90% tactics because every game, whether at the lowest level or highest level, must eventually be decided by a tactic, some sort of threat. Somebody missed the threat by their opponent of some kind in order to lose a chess game. So tactics, in that sense, make up for 90% of the critical moments of chess, because if you blunder, you lose. It's that simple. So with that said, we don't really need to tell you why it's important to win your opponent's pieces. We all know that the ultimate goal of the game is to checkmate the enemy king. So informing you that you should count attackers and defenders, try to capture your opponent's pieces, shouldn't be new information to you, nor should it be that you should try to prevent your opponent from doing relatively the same thing. But what we like to do is show you the basic and critical tactical patterns you should be aware of when you play your games. Now, these are the most fundamental because we can't fit everything into this small video. What we can do is tell you that every tactical pattern, even the most advanced, are in some ways more advanced versions that are just built on top of these fundamental and critical themes that we're going to show you here today. So let's go ahead and jump right in with the first tactical pattern, that being the double attack or fork. A double attack is arguably the most common type of tactical pattern that occurs in a chess game. Essentially, the principle is simple. You move one piece to attack two enemy pieces at the same time, thus leaving your opponent in sometimes an impossible situation when it comes to defending both pieces. Here we see a very simple version, a very commonly used version, to highlight the principle of a double attack. The white rook moves to f7, attacking both the knight and the bishop at one time, and white will win material shortly. A fork is the term used to describe a double attack by either the knight or the pawn. Here we see two forks in action, with the knight having the ability to move knight to e7 check, forking the king and queen, as well as we see the pawn with the ability to move forward, forking the two knights. By definition, a double attack or a fork only works if you're attacking two pieces that cannot capture you back. For example, if we replace the queen on c8, with a knight, it would not be possible for this knight to move to e7 and fork the king and knight, as he would simply be recaptured. And so, in summary, a double attack is the act of moving one piece to attack at least two enemy pieces at one time, with the fork being a term we use to describe a double attack by either the knight or the pawn. Arguably the second most common type of tactical pattern or theme that can occur in a chess game would be a pin. A pin is the act of attacking an enemy piece, however that piece either cannot move or does not wish to move for fear of losing a more valuable piece. The first type of pin is known as an absolute pin. That would be when a piece is pinned to the king, for it is absolutely illegal for that piece to move. We see that the bishop on b5 is also applying an absolute pin to the rook. The second type of pin that can occur in a chess game, known as a relative pin, is on display here. We see the bishop attacking the knight on f6, and though that knight might like to move under certain circumstances, it would be ill-advised to do so as long as there is a queen standing behind it. Though it is not illegal for the pin piece to move in a relative pin, it is normally not going to happen because moving the lesser value piece would immediately result in the loss of a greater value piece. A relative pin can also be a very powerful tool, though it is not as forcing of a tactic as an absolute pin.
I love our country. It's why I enlisted after 9/11, why I've served as a soldier for over 16 years, deployed twice to the Middle East, and serve in Congress now for almost 7 years. I know what patriotism is, and I've known many great patriots throughout my life. And let me tell you this, Donald Trump is not behaving like a patriot. As president, I will bring this spirit of real patriotism to the White House, serving the interests of all Americans, not just the rich and powerful.
I want to bring in Congresswoman Gabbard. Congresswoman Gabbard, you took issue with Senator Harris confronting Vice President Biden at the last debate. You called it a, quote, false accusation that Joe Biden is a racist. What's your response?
I want to bring the conversation back to the broken criminal justice system that is disproportionately negatively impacting black and brown people all across this country today. Now, Senator Harris says she's proud of her record as a prosecutor and that she'll be a prosecutor president, but I'm deeply concerned about this record. There are too many examples to cite, but she put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana. She blocked evidence that would have freed an innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so. She kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. And she fought to keep cash bail system in place that impacts poor people in the worst kind of way.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Senator Harris, your response?
As the elected Attorney General of California, I did the work of significantly reforming the criminal justice system of a state of 40 million people, which became a national model for the work that needs to be done. And I am proud of that work. And I am proud of making a decision to not just give fancy speeches or be in a legislative body and give speeches on the floor, but actually doing the work of being in the position to use the power that I had to reform a system that is badly in need of reform. That is why we created initiatives that were about reentering former offenders and getting them counseling. It is why, and because I know that criminal justice system is so broken, that I am an advocate for what
Thank
we
you,
need
Senator.
To do to not
your
only decriminalize, but legalize marijuana in the United States.
I want to bring Congresswoman Gabbard back in. Your response,
The bottom line is, Senator Harris, when you were in a position to make a difference and an impact in these people's lives, you did not. And worse yet, in the case of those who were on death row, innocent people, you actually blocked evidence from being revealed that would have freed them until you were forced to do so. There is no excuse for that. And the people who suffered under your reign as prosecutor, you owe them an apology.
Senator Harris.
The reality is right now we don't have a health care system. We have a sick care system, and there are far too many people in this country who are sick and unable to get the care that they need because they cannot afford it. So the core of this problem is the fact that big insurance companies and big pharmaceutical companies who've been profiting off the backs of sick people have had a seat at the table writing this legislation. Now, Kamala Harris just talked about Kathleen Sebelius, who helped write her bill. This just pointed to the fatal flaw in her proposal. Sebelius works for Medicare Advantage, private insurance company who will stand to profit under her plan. If we're seeking to really reform our healthcare system, we've got to shut out big insurance and big pharma out of the drafting process so they cannot continue to profit off the backs of the sick people in this country who are searching and in desperate need of care.
Senator Harris, your response?
Well, unfortunately, Representative Gabbard got it wrong. Kathleen Sebelius did not write my plan. She endorsed it as being one of the plans that is the best to get us to a place where everyone is going to have access to health care in America. And when we talk about this again, I'm going to go back to Vice President Biden, because your plan does not cover everyone in America by your staff's and your own definition. 10 million people. As many as 10 million people will not have access to health care.
Many saw the Trans-Pacific Partnership issue as something that would be a critical tool to deal with the rise of China. You were against it. How would you ensure that the United States is able to remain competitive against China on the world stage?
By pushing for fair trade, not trade deals that give away the sovereignty of the American people and our country, that give away American jobs, and that threaten our environment. These are the three main issues with that massive trade deal, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I think the central one was the fact that it gave away our sovereignty to a panel of international corporations whose rulings would supersede any domestic law that we would pass, either a federal law or a state or a local law. This is extremely dangerous and goes against the very values that we have as a country, what to speak of the fact that it would have a negative impact on domestic jobs and that it lacked clear protections for our environment. These are the things that we have to keep at the forefront as we look to enact fair trade deals with other countries to make sure that we continue to be a thriving part of our global economy.
So to be clear, Congresswoman, would you keep President Trump's tariffs on China in place?
I would not, because the approach that President Trump has taken has been extremely volatile, without any clear strategic plan, and it has a ravaging and devastating effect on our domestic manufacturers, on our farmers who are already struggling and now failing to see the light of day because of the plan that Trump has taken. Donald Trump won this election because far too many people in this country felt like they've been left behind by both political parties, by self-serving politicians on both sides who are more interested in partisan politics than they are in actually fighting for the people. I'm speaking the truth to people all across this country about the fact that people in Flint, Michigan are still being left behind, still being poisoned by the water in their system, because every single month we are spending $4 billion on a continuing war in Afghanistan, $4 billion every single month, rather than ending that war, bringing our troops home, and using those precious resources into serving the needs of the people here in this country, people
and
communities like Flint. That's the kind of leadership that I'll bring.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Senator.
Oh, first of all, this is personal. You can imagine I grew up in Hawaii, which is the most remote island chain in the world. So for us, growing up there, protecting our environment was not a political issue. It's a way of life. It's part of our culture. It's part of who we are. This is why, as a member of Congress, long before there was ever a Green New Deal, I introduced the most ambitious climate change legislation ever in Congress, called the Off Fossil Fuels Act, that actually laid out an actionable plan to take us from where we are today to transition off of fossil fuels and invest in green renewable energy, invest in workforce training, invest in the kinds of infrastructure that we need to deal with the problems and the challenges that climate is posing to us today.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Senator Booker.
Now, Donald Trump and warmongering politicians in Washington have failed us. They continue to escalate tensions with other nuclear-armed countries like Russia and China and North Korea, starting a new Cold War, pushing us closer and closer to the brink of nuclear catastrophe. Now, as we stand here tonight, there are thousands of nuclear missiles pointed at us. And if we were to get an attack right here tonight, we would have 30 minutes before we were hit. And you would receive an alert like the one we received in Hawaii last year that would say, incoming missile, seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill. And you would see, as we did, as my loved ones in Hawaii did, there is no shelter. This is the warmonger's hoax. There is no shelter. It's all a lie. As president, I will end this insanity, because it doesn't have to be this way. I will end these wasteful regime change wars, work to end this new Cold War through the use of diplomacy to de-escalate these tensions and take the trillions of dollars that we've been wasting on these wars and on these weapons and redirect those resources into serving the needs of our people right here at home. Things like health care for all, making sure everyone in this country has clean water to drink and clean air to breathe, investing in education, investing in our infrastructure. The needs are great. As your president, I will put your interests above all else.
Class war, class war, class war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
My attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is your brother, Vermeer Deese. Welcome to this Class War Better for Podcast segment. A couple weeks ago, Tulsi Gabbard released this video titled, Watch the 9 Minutes, that has America searching Tulsi Gabbard. Ladies and gentlemen, you should watch that video. In fact, I played a little bit of it just so you could hear it. Actually, I played it all, sorry. But you should really watch the video and take a look at Kamala Harris's her face, her facial expressions. Because see, if you are a black person, or if you know black people really, really, really well, you're going to understand what is going through her mind by looking at her face. There is a moment, and this is not actually why I'm doing this segment, but I find this just so hilarious. This is one of my favorite all-time videos. I will be watching this thing 10 years from now. That's how much I love this video. There's a moment where she squints her eyes and there is this anger that she really wants to unleash on Tulsi Gabbard, but she can't. It's great. The reason why I'm doing this video though, I've been recording videos, so that's where my mind's at. But the reason why I'm doing this segment is because I've been saying to you to watch all of this like you're watching a game of chess. And in case you missed it, I want to tell you or explain to you further what you witnessed at the second debate and why the DNC is not really interested in letting Tulsi Gabbard participate in another debate. First and foremost, I did not know this, and I feel dumb for not knowing it because I knew it in 2016, but I forgot about it, that Tulsi Gabbard, when she ran for her congressional seat, was a darling in the Democratic establishment, and I can't imagine why she wouldn't. I mean, she is technically a minority, she is, but she looks white. Which is a plus because that there's, in the liberal class, among liberals and moderates, there is still a very, very racist element, and you really don't want to be seen as too dark around some of those elements. But she She is a military person. She is a moderate on some social issues, but she is a progressive on the rest, which could help her appeal to, quote, independents and Republicans. She is very intelligent. I've even read somewhere, I know she's, obviously she's in the National Guard, but I've read that, you know, she has some sort of military intelligence training. Don't know how true that is, and in fact, don't often like to think about that, because that's a little bit frightening. You know, we all know about Pete Buttigieg and his military intelligence training. I don't like thinking about why the military intelligence would want to have a person serving as president. I really don't. But that said, she is really, and by the way, I gotta add this because this is massively important. She's young. She's very young. And this is important because there's about to be a generational shift. And it's likely going to be a kind of a war that goes on between the generations. The 20s are going to be massive, massive, massively afflicted with this contention, because the baby boomers' mindset is being swept away by the millennial mindset, and the baby boomers aren't letting go. So that usually breeds conflict, deep conflict. Her youthfulness, though, could have helped her appeal to the Occupy Wall Street crowd, could have helped her appeal to the millennial crowd, to younger college-aged peoples. I forgot she was a darling. She was the vice chair of the Democratic National Committee. Vice chair. And she threw it away. And she threw it away to support Bernie Sanders. I remember hearing about this in 2016. I just didn't get, and this is my naivety, I suppose, I didn't get the importance of it. I really honestly did not get the importance of it. I get it now. Why though, this is important right at this particular moment in seeing what's happening surrounding this debate. And I don't know if all of you know what's going on with the debate. Tulsi Gabbard, there were two primary criteria that you had to meet. You had to have 130,000 plus individual donors, so over 130,000 individual donors. Tulsi Gabbard blew that away. Already had that taken care of, like, wasn't even an issue. And then you had to register a 2% or higher in 4 certified or DNC approved polls. Now, Tulsi Gabbard herself have found reputable polls which put her well over, some of them well over 2%, some of them just at 2%, and yet none of these are being accepted by the DNC. Now you may say, well, it's their right, but it smells a little bit fishy when you remember she was the vice chair of the DNC, and I didn't know this until recently either. I just found this out. Thank you, Jimmy Dore. After the first debate, the DNC released a list of, I think it was 14 approved polls that they were going to be accepting. At present, after the second debate, they only released 6, but has admitted that there's a list of a lot more, but they're just not releasing them. So you may still be saying, well, look, it's their right. Come on, man. You know, that's just the DNC. They can do that. It's their prerogative. I would believe that. Let me tell you a story of what you watched, because a lot of you probably won't just, you know, ignored the debates, or if you did see the debates, it was like me, you know, you seen a bit of it, and then that was it. But I want to tell you the story about Kamala Harris and Tulsi Gabbard, because there's a story there. The chessboard was set, and I want to blow up the narrative presently. I want to blow up the narrative presently that they were setting Joe Biden up to be the front runner. I'm blowing that narrative up. I don't believe it for a moment. Why? One, because Joe Biden didn't even want to get into the race. Two, Joe Biden has never really been nationally that popular. And three, okay, fine. I imagine there was a contend. There is probably a group of people within the DNC that said, we really need Joe Biden. He'll save the party. But I believe there was more who said, you're crazy, it ain't going to work. So maybe I guess I'm not blowing it up completely. But sometime after Joe Biden did announce, the plan shifted. And you've seen the plan start to come into focus in the first debate. When you saw Kamala Harris hit Joe Biden hard, it was a ploy. It was scripted. Oh, do I mean, you know, they told them what to say? No. Absolutely not. But Joe Biden was making gaffes on the trail. It was obvious to people that he wasn't really in it to win it. That his heart just wasn't in it. So they had to make a decision. Who are we going to put forward to take his thunder? If Beto was a better candidate, horrible, horrible candidate, the man needs to quit and run for Senate. Beto O'Rourke would be a really, really good project, but he needs more polishing. He's not where he needs to be. He needs way more polishing. For a man who looks like he should be a lot better of a campaigner than he is, he's disappointing. He is. He's really disappointing. But if he was a better campaigner, they would have put him up instead of Kamala Harris. If Cory Booker was believable, I mean, most people really have Cory Booker pegged right. He's a lighter version of Obama and loves corporations just a little bit more than he does. So Cory Booker wasn't believable. Pete Buttigieg, I really truthfully wonder sometimes if this is to increase his stature in the Democratic Party so he can move up. It would not surprise me if soon he runs either for Senate or Congress. It's going to be one of the two. Or he might even surprise me and run for governor out that way, but I highly doubt he's going to run for governor. I think he's going to probably go something national. He just seems like he's aiming for that. Either that, if he does none of that, he will go deeper into the Democratic Party and become kind of, you know, an insider. Not a kingmaker, but a player. A party player. Because that seems to be where he's aiming. So he does ultimately want to be president, I believe, but he's gonna take this national spotlight and move it a little bit before making another run for the presidency. And they knew that, so they couldn't put him up there. And there was really no one else. See, because the Democratic Party, you know, they got a little bit of an issue. They want to draw a contrast with Donald Trump, and they want to make it stark. So they were already getting hit over Joe Biden, over, you know, some Democratic Party insiders love fest with Joe Biden because he's another old white man who, you know, I saw papers saying, basically, we've had enough of these old white men running things. Let's get someone either younger in there or maybe even, you know, someone colored or somebody who was a female. And even beyond that, it was just... I like what Mark Blythe said about looking at a conference with Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and Donald Trump. It looked like a... it looked like a nursing home or retirement village meeting. And so I think that's how some people were viewing Mr. Biden. And to be honest with you, I know some of you would be like, oh my God, that's so ageist. But look, the generation just really does not want to let go. And it's getting to that time where it's like, we need to remote grandma. Come on, we need to move forward. Okay? And I hate having to say that because I know someday I'm going to get older and I'm not necessarily going to want to sit down either. But for the betterment of the country, you kind of got to make those decisions. That said, they put Kamala Harris forward to see how it polled. To see how it polled. So have her take a swipe at Joe Biden and see how people reacted to it. Because that's what that was. That was just a test. Okay, can we make this work? Can we shift the power balance from Joe Biden to Kamala Harris in order to allow him to gracefully walk away? Because that's what this was about. This was about allowing him to save face and to say, you know, it's a younger man's game. America needs somebody younger. It's just not about me, yada, 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 and then to walk away. The first debate was about setting up the possibility of her taking his thunder, taking his donors and everything. And it seemed to work. She bumped up in the polls. People were talking positively about her. She was not really trending, but people, you know... There was an uptick in the polls. So they were intrigued by this. All right, they said. Let's go to round two now. We're going to have Joe be a little bit more forceful. But we want her to swing a little bit on him too. So then we can see how the American people respond to her going harder at Mr. Biden. And then we're going to move and maybe get, you know, Cory Booker in there a little bit. And they were maneuvering to beat up Joe, to get him out. Because look, Joe Biden's heart isn't in it. Let's get him out. This is my theory. My theory. But then something happened, which was completely unplanned. And this is why they won't let her, or they're going to do everything they can to keep Tulsi Gabbard away from the debate stage. Because nobody saw this coming. The DNC did not see this coming. When it was apparent that Kamala Harris was moving out front to eclipse Joe Biden. And you could read it in the newspapers. It was very clear that this shift was happening, pushing her to the forefront to allow him to drift back. Here comes Tulsi Gabbard. Here comes Tulsi Gabbard. The former vice chair to the DNC, Tulsi Gabbard. She knows these positions. She knows these moves. And she watched, and she waited. I have another theory too, and it's scandalous to even wonder it. And I know she still has connections in with the DNC. She obviously does. What if, and maybe this isn't even really a theory, but I want to add a layer to this. What if, you know, she's talking to the DNC, you know, her people still in the DNC, who she knew, and some deal is made. I don't know what the deal would be. I was wondering about this the other day, like, what kind of deal could they make her? Because she'd never go back and work for them, but what kind of deal could they make her? Because, you know, it was so weird to see her come out there in white. I truthfully looked at it and said, that's a sign. She is communicating something with that white uniform, with that white suit that she has on. So maybe, you know, maybe she said to her, you know, maybe she had hinted that she was going to get in line and support whoever the DNC was going to, you know, as long as they didn't screw Bernie Sanders. And the suit was her way of communicating. She says, you know, if I wear a white suit, you're going to know that I'm agreeing to what you say. And so, she, you know, she, and that's, just, again, that's my own thing, and it probably never happened. It's just something very interesting to think about, because the suit was so out of place. The suit was so out of place. And I made a joke to a friend of mine, and then I'll get back to, you know, my theory here. And I said it was really cold that she wore that suit. And, you know, the language, I don't know if you understand what I mean by really cold, but man, it was really just telling that she wore that suit. It was as if she was saying, you know, I'm going to beat the bloody pulp out of this woman and not get a single drop onto my suit. That's how clean it's about to occur. It was as if, I mean, I swear that was kind of where she was coming from with it. But anyway, so she watches. Obviously, and look, she said very little in the first debate. And I said to a friend in remarking about how little that she actually said in the first debate, I said she was watching. She was watching. And he didn't understand. And I said, she was setting the field, man. She was feeling where everybody was at. I go, I guarantee that she studied, I can't remember if she was on the first night or the second night, but the night that she wasn't there, I guarantee she studied that afterwards to understand where and why everybody was placed where they were at. And now she's going to use that information as she goes on into the debates. And it was clear that the information that she gleaned from that first debate, she used to attack Kamala Harris on. Not specifically point by point, because those points have been, you know, well reported. I'm talking about when she decided to go at her. Because Kamala Harris was feeling herself. And if you don't know what I mean, she was feeling good, man. Her ego was swelling up. She was seeing her nomination, I mean, to be the Democratic candidate to the presidency. She was seeing it as she was making her moves. And like the man who rode in on the white horse. And yeah, I said, man, but that's the way it goes. I'm sorry. Here comes Tulsi Gabbard, wearing white. And she hit her with a 1-2 punch combo that not only you can look at the video and you can see it caught Kamala Harris by surprise. That's why she literally caught her voice in her throat. And then, after she did regain her little composure and rattled off some stuff, you know, that was first incoherent. I mean, you can understand what it was, but it made no sense compared to what was just said about her. And then she did make some sense at the end of it. And then Tulsi Gabbard obviously knew that she had her on the ropes and went in for the kill. And with that, I mean, this is the part that I was talking about earlier where you need to watch the video, ladies and gentlemen. Because you see it on her face. Tulsi Gabbard moved on the chessboard. You know, you make a move. Let's say you take your knight and you move your knight. And you're confident that you just made a stark, a brilliant move, a tactical move. And here comes this little pawn that you ain't even know was there. You didn't even calculate him in because that's how insignificant he was. And that's what Tulsi Gabbard turned out to be. She was a little pawn. And I know you're going, well, man, on a board, she'd be a little bit more powerful than a pawn. You have to understand, they treat her like she's a pawn. So that's how I'm going to put her on the board. And she made that move. Click. Before that knight could do anything, it was over. She hit Kamala Harris with so many facts about her misdeeds in order... See, because the facts that she gave weren't just facts. A lot of people think that, oh, it's a horrible record, man. This is the stuff that she did, and it's just nuts. It's disgusting. She should be ashamed. You know why it hurt so much? Why Kamala Harris was hurt so much? And this goes to why she responded the way she did. In order to move up in the Democratic Party and be a black person or a person with a lot of melanin, you have to demonstrate the fact that, one, either you are going to ignore black people to the point where it is harmful to who they are. Two, that you are willing to harm black people so that the destruction that you do is felt almost generationally. Or three, that you are willing to get black people to harm themselves and to look the other way. And I apologize, you know, I should just say to really rise in the ranks of wealthy white privilege and as a black person, you have to be willing to do one of them three things. Jay-Z famously, I think this was back in 2012, he released this song, and I can't remember the song for the life of me because I wasn't listening to Jay-Z back then, but he had a line in there. And I only heard about this song because there was this great, oh, just absolutely wonderful podcast at the time called Occupy the Hood. And it was done by this group of black activists, and it was on a Progressive Radio Network. Absolutely wonderful. And he had this line in there where he was threatening to flood the black community with crack. And one of the activists said, think about the derangement that you have to have in your mind to think that this is a threat to anybody but the black community. To say that you are so pissed off at somebody who isn't even in the community that you are going to turn a spigot on and kill a whole bunch of black people or put them, you know, deeper into addiction. This is what you must do in order to rise as a black person in that circle of people. People often say, oh, well, you know, the Republicans are the most horrible. No, because the Republicans are at least going to tell you, look, we really don't give a damn about black people. The Democrats pretend like they do. And yet, all of the major black leaders that they give to black America do things that suggest that they hate black America. And yes, now I am also talking about the Congressional Black Caucus. I don't hate the Congressional Black Caucus, and Lord knows I'm not taking a shot at them because I think they really hate the black community, because I don't. But you are forced to ignore the black community to the point where it is injurious to us. What Tulsi Gabbard did was she listed all the things that Kamala Harris had to do to prove her loyalty to that group of people. All the folks that she had to injure and hurt and almost kill to get to where she was at. She, in other words, ladies and gentlemen, she showed you where the bodies were. She gave you an accounting of the receipts of the deeds that Kamala Harris had to do in order to get to where she was at. But you didn't know it. What you thought you were hearing was all these bad things that she did, and she knowingly did it, and it, you know, it's a character flaw or something. No, ladies and gentlemen. Uh-uh. What is the old saying? Blood in, blood out. She sacrificed people for her career. Now, there's a part of me that wants to say that I hope she didn't like it. And then there's another part of me that says she probably did like it. But it doesn't matter. She showed the receipts of how Kamala Harris got to where she was at. That's what she did. And that is exactly why the Democratic Party, that's one of the reasons why the Democratic Party is working overtime to keep her off of this, the third debate stage. There's another reason. Oh, a much more bigger reason. This is their fear. Oh, this is their fear. This explains why suddenly you're hearing a lot about Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Elizabeth Warren is caught up with Bernie Sanders. Ladies and gentlemen, these polls you need to take with a grain of salt. Because there are major moves being made in the Democratic Party right now to set up a board of their liking. They're trying to put Sanders together with Warren so they could hopefully, if they hopefully want to be able to take Sanders down with Warren. But if they can't, they're going to try to pair the two of them together so that Warren can try to cool off his more radical side. But I'm a little bit ahead of myself. Let me back up, because what she did, and you want to talk about heated, the Democratic Party had to be livid when she did this. What she did was Kamala Harris, they were raising Kamala Harris to try to put her next to Bernie Sanders, and then they were going to push her to the left, just like Obama was pushed to the left back in 2008. Obama ran a center-left primary challenge. And after he defeated everybody, then he not only moved back to the center, but he moved center-right. They were about to push her up to Sanders, move her left, get her caught up to Sanders, maybe even get her to overtake Sanders, because, you know, she was going to now overtake Biden. So then push her as the black candidate, because Biden has supposedly a lot of support among black people. So get black people's allegiance to switch to Kamala Harris. That's exactly what they were trying to position her to do. Put her up as the female Barack Obama. Keep playing up this notion that Bernie Sanders does not have a lot of black support. You have Charlemagne the God suddenly come out and endorsing Kamala Harris. You have a bunch of other middle class media black faces coming out and endorsing Kamala Harris. This is all the ploy to position her to move beyond Joe Biden to then be able to take on Bernie Sanders with now not support from white people, but support from black and brown people. She was going to be the black candidate, because you get the black candidate, then you're going to start getting defections, because white people want to be where black people are at. Or at least you can split the vote. That's where their minds were at. What she did, seeing that this is what they were going to do, and I believe Bernie Sanders saw it too. And I think actually, to be honest with you, I think they might have talked a little bit before this, but hey, that could just be my intuition running crazy. So don't take that as, you know, gospel truth. She saw what they were doing, and she saw that this was all a movement to head off Bernie Sanders using a long game strategy. She played the blocker, basically, for Bernie Sanders, and took out Kamala Harris, knowing that the game was to get her forward to be able to try to challenge Bernie Sanders by splitting the vote. Which, by the way, suggests that they were willing to split the vote and to then allow basically Donald Trump to win, because half of the voting base may be disgruntled, especially if it was Kamala Harris who ended up being the nominee. So they may not come out. So they were willing to let, in the long run, Donald Trump win by putting up a candidate that is less liked than Bernie Sanders. But even greater than that, she showed that she was an ally to Bernie Sanders. She showed that she was an ally to Bernie Sanders. And now with the new strategy, which is moving Elizabeth Warren into the same lane as Sanders, the Democratic Party cannot have a true ally of Bernie Sanders on that stage. Because that's going to mess up this board that they're setting up. Pure and simple, ladies and gentlemen. You can literally see it if you pay attention. And you don't even have to pay attention that much. You can literally see it if you take about 3 minutes a day and just look at it. That's how I saw it. All right, I was probably engulfed like an hour and a half sometimes. But I still saw it. They're setting up Elizabeth Warren to be either a foil for Bernie Sanders or an intricate part in his cabinet, which I'll be honest with you. At this moment in time, I'm not certain if he's just not saying, okay, fine. If I got to have her as a vice president to get you guys to somewhat listen to me, fine. But I say it again, they're going to work overtime to keep her off that stage, Tulsi Gabbard. And it's not just because she is an anti-war candidate. I know a lot of progressives like to talk like that and like to just think like that, because that's just where progressive minds are at. Oh, she's an anti-war candidate. Y'all need to understand, man. And I, you know, the country comes out of me sometimes, so I apologize. But y'all really do need to understand it's bigger than that. I keep saying it, and obviously people aren't listening. There is this fight that's going on. There is this fight that's going on. And if you don't acknowledge the moves that are being made because of that fight, you're not seeing the whole picture. They are fearful that if they get, and look, I'm hoping she makes the third debate. I really am. But I'm saying right now that from the way it looks like they are fearful that if she gets on the stage with Bernie Sanders, he will have a real ally, not a false one, Elizabeth Warren. Notice, by the way, how they moved a woman into tying with him. Suddenly. Why is Elizabeth Warren catching fire suddenly? Oh, because she had some moments at the debate. Really? She's not catching fire, maybe one, because the media has been on this full court blitz about her being a real progressive, a true progressive. She's not catching fire because these polls are making it seem like she's catching fire, the same way that they made it look like Hillary Clinton was far more popular than she actually was. Yeah, they're moving Elizabeth Warren into position because the real ally that Bernie Sanders has is a woman named Tulsi Gabbard. See, because, and the Democrats are very aware of this, they can't be seen as being sexist. Because think about it. Tulsi Gabbard could make the argument that there is something sexist going on here because of how they are, well, I don't know. I was going to say because how they're treating her, but maybe it would backfire because there are two other women in this race. But, it does look a lot better if there is a surging woman who is not Tulsi Gabbard, who I'm saying to you, ladies and gentlemen, I know people don't like this said, but it needs to be said, that she is being shortchanged. That internal polling, I keep referring to it because the Democratic Party is never going to let you see their internal polling. But I'm telling you right now, one of the other reasons why they're keeping her out of the debate is because internal polling doesn't have Elizabeth Warren making this huge surge. Internal polling has Tulsi Gabbard making a huge surge. So I mention internal polling a lot. And the reason I mention internal polling a lot is because what I've learned about the major polling, these big organizations, big companies are doing the polling, is a couple of things. One, the sample sizes are usually much larger. That's one. Two, when they're doing state by state, it's not only just an aggregate of multiple polls polls that are deemed to be really, really important, but also they typically utilize formulas and other things that I don't quite understand because mean statistics, I love it for a lot. You know, it's a really good thing to get into, but sometimes it can be a little bit confusing. So they use all these formulas and what have you, and sometimes even take those polls and match it with other polling data which they themselves have gathered. And so these polls are much more determinative, and they're also much more thorough, often. And that is why they can make decisions based on them. A lot of the times, they aren't making decisions based on the ones that we see. It's the big ones that they're paying all this money for. And I learned the importance of polling, not from myself, but from Noam Chomsky. He's back in the 80s and the 90s, the early 90s particularly, he talked a lot about polling. People just didn't pay attention because they thought polling was, and the man was brilliant because he would only talk about the ones that the public seen. But if you were a graduate, an undergraduate or a graduate student, you would realize very quickly, and sometimes even didn't even take you to be a graduate student, but you would realize quickly just how deep the polling network went and how many other types of polls there were other than just the ones that we've seen publicly. There are tons of polls that, you know, are conducted by academic, scientific, and private journals. Stuff that we don't even know exist. And this is the real information that they're looking at. They know, after two debates, which made Tulsi Gabbard the most Googled, searched candidate in the country in all states, two debates, she was the most, not Kamala Harris, not Elizabeth Warren, not Biden, not Beto, not Corey, not any of these other guys. It was her. Two times. Twice. I heard one guy say, oh, well, it's because she's beautiful. Sure. She is beautiful. She is gorgeous. Tulsi Gabbard is a fine woman. But I would argue with them, that ain't because she's just attractive, but it's also because what she says is attractive. Their internal polling, just like I said to you about Bernie Sanders, this is why they're backing off a little bit on Bernie Sanders, because you're going to see a generational split. You're going to see a generational split. And they are realizing that they really do have a generational upheaval happening. She, in those internal polls, is surging. She's surging. Kamala's probably got a little wind, which has been knocked out of her because of what Tulsi Gabbard did, but Tulsi is surging. I was on a video of hers. Actually, it was on the video that I played earlier, the Watch the 9 Minutes that has America searching Tulsi Gabbard. 1 million views, by the way. And I was looking through it, and I saw a number of Republicans saying, you know, I'm going to vote for her. I want her to be the nominee. I saw one guy post that he's a Trump supporter, and it's going to be difficult if Tulsi Gabbard is the Democratic nominee. I mean, this is saying something, ladies and gentlemen. You have to see the bigger picture. You have to see the bigger picture. They don't want her there. And look, this is going to apply in the future, too. You have to start seeing the moves that are being made. They don't want her there because she's a real ally to Bernie Sanders. And once you see the two of them together, it's going to change the whole perception of Elizabeth Warren. And they don't want that. Tulsi, if I could just add this last thing, the one great thing about Tulsi Gabbard, who really, you know, it's so funny because she even has everyone calling her Tulsi, but I always want to say, shouldn't we be calling her Congresswoman Gabbard? And yet she's like, no, Tulsi. Anyway, she has this energy and this power with her, and you can feel it, that stabilizes and magnifies. No, wrong one. Nope, right word, magnified. And magnifies the energy. And just, she is the type of woman in a leadership position who just seems to bring elegance and brilliance and draws the brilliance out of other people. That's her type of energy. And I can understand, because when you're on, I can understand why they don't want her there. Because when you're on the wrong side of that, she'll devastate you. But when you're on the right side of it, she'll make you better. So this was supposed to be a segment, and it's not. It's an episode. Actually, I'm going to probably have this be an addendum. So thank you, guys. You know, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, and, you know, it's so funny, man. At no time since I've been doing this podcast, and I felt like I really had to say this. I did this podcast in 2011, 2012. 2013. I mean, I started in 2011, but I did it for the, you know, the presidential election in 2012, which I produced 5 episodes for the presidential elections. 5 or 4, either way. And then I didn't touch the midterms in 2014. I didn't really touch the 2016 election until after it happened. I recorded episodes, ladies and gentlemen. Never posted them. I touched a little bit of the midterms last time, and now this time I'm all over. I'm all over this one. And I was thinking about why that was. I don't know. Actually, I do. Actually, I do. The reason simply, ladies and gentlemen, is that things are getting bad, and we have to start seeing what's happening before us, before it's too late. So I want you to understand things. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can always leave them below. I always love hearing from you guys. Just to let you know, because it's important, and I said leave them below. I suppose if you're watching this on YouTube, then you can leave them below. But if you want to shoot me a message, on the front of each episode that I produce, I create a cover for it. And at the bottom of the cover, every single one of them, at the bottom of the cover, it says, if you have any questions, comments, concerns. And in blue, my email address is there. And I realized that I hadn't been telling you that. I've actually been including that since like 2016. And I've never told you guys that. I just said, you know, the email's there so you could contact me. But that's only if you get me at radioforall.net. That's radio, the number 4, all.net. RADIO, number 4, ALL.NET. So that's only if you catch me at radioforall.net. I am also, by the way, now on Anchor FM. So you can catch me there. And, you know, hopefully I'll get to a couple more platforms and keep doing this for a long time, you know? I was thinking about giving it up. Must be honest with y'all. I really was. I was thinking about giving it up. But, nope. Still doing it. All right. So, till the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is your brother, Vimer Deese. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and there are lights in the balance.